I'm often asked, what surprises you about the book? And I said, that I got to write it. I would have never imagined that, not in my wildest dreams, that I think. I don't even consider myself to be an author. And I'm often asked, why do you think so many people have read this? This thing selling still about 1 million copies a month. And I think it's because spiritual emptiness is a universal disease. I think inside, at some point, we put our heads down on the pillow and we go, there's got to be more to life than this. Get up in the morning, go to work, come home and watch TV, go to bed. Get up in the morning, go to work, come home, watch TV, go to bed. Go to parties on the weekends. A lot of people say, I'm living. No, you are not living. That's just existing. Just existing. I really think that there is this inner desire. I do believe what Christ said. I believe that you're not an accident. Your parents may not have planned you, but I believe God did. I think they're accidental parents. There's no doubt about that. I don't think they're accidental kids. And I think you matter. I think you matter to God. I think you matter to history. I think you matter to this universe. And I think that the difference between what I call the survival level of living, the success level of living, and the significant level of living is, do you figure out what on earth I'm here for? I meet a lot of people who are very smart and I say, but why can't I figure out my problems? And I meet a lot of people who are very successful who say, why don't I feel more fulfilled? Why do I feel like a fake? Why do I feel like I've got to pretend that I'm more than I really am? I think that comes down to this issue of meaning, of significance, of purpose. I think comes down to this issue of, why am I here? What am I here for? Where am I going? These are not religious issues, they're human issues. I wanted to tell you, Michael, before he spoke, that I really appreciate what he does because it makes my life work a whole lot easier. As a pastor, as a pastor, I do see a lot of cooks, and I've learned that there are cooks in every area of life. Religion doesn't have a monopoly on that, but there are plenty of religious cooks. There are secular cooks. There are smart cooks, dumb cooks. There are people. A lady came up to me the other day and she had a white piece of paper. Michael, you'll like this one. And she said, what do you see in it? And I look at it, I said, oh, I don't see anything. And she goes, well, I see Jesus. I started crying and left. I'm going, okay, you know, fine. Good for you. When the book became the best-selling book in the world, for the last 3 years, I kind of had my little crisis. And that was, what is the purpose of this? Because it brought it enormous amounts of money. When you write the best-selling book in the world, it's tons and tons of money. And it brought in a lot of attention. Neither of which I wanted. When I started Saddleback Church, I was 25 years old. I started it with one other family in 1980, and I decided that I was never going to go on TV because I didn't want to be a celebrity. I didn't want to be a quote, evangelist, televangelist. That's not my thing. And all of a sudden, it brought a lot of money, a lot of attention. I don't think now, this is a worldview, and I will tell you, everybody's got a worldview. Everybody's betting their life on something. You're betting your life on something. You just better know why you're betting what you're betting on. So everybody's betting their life on something. And when I, you know, made a bet, I happen to believe that Jesus was who he said he was. But everybody's got, and I believe in pluralistic society. Everybody's betting on something. When I started the church, you know, I had no plans to do what's doing now. And then when I wrote this book, all of a sudden just took off. Now, I started saying now, what's the purpose of this? Because as I started to say, I don't think you're given money or fame for your own ego, ever. I just don't believe that. And when you write a book that the first sentence of the book is, it's not about you, then when all of a sudden it becomes the best-selling book in history, you gotta figure, well, I guess it's not about me. That's kind of a no-brainer. So, what's it for? And I began to think about what I call the stewardship of affluence and the stewardship of influence. So I believe, essentially, that leadership is a stewardship. That if you're a leader in any area, in business, in politics, in sports, in art, in academics, in any area, you don't own it. You're a steward of it. For instance, that's why I believe in protecting the environment. This is not my planet. It wasn't mine before I was born. It's not going to be mine after I die. I'm just here for 80 years and then that's it. The problem is most people never really think it through. They never really codify it. Or qualify it, or quantify it, and say, this is what I believe in, this is why I believe what I believe. I don't personally have enough faith to be an atheist, but you may. Your worldview, though, does determine everything else in your life, because it determines your decision. It determines your relationship, it determines your level of confidence. It determines, really, everything in your life. What we believe, obviously, and you know this, determines our behavior, and our behavior determines what we become in life. So, all of this money started pouring in, and all of this fame started pouring in. And I go, what do I do with this? My wife and I first made 5 decisions on what to do with the money. We said, first, we're not going to use it on ourselves. I didn't go out and buy a bigger house. I don't own a guest house. I still drive the same 4-year-old Ford that I've driven. We just said, we're not going to use it on us. The second thing was, I stopped taking a salary from the church that I pastor. Third thing is, I added up all the church that had paid me before over the last 25 years, and I give it back. I give it back because I didn't want anybody thinking what I do for money. I don't. In fact, personally, I never ever met a priest or pastor or a minister who does it for money. I know that's a stereotype. I've never met one of them. Believe me, that's a whole lot easier way to make money. Pastors are like on 24 hours a day call. They're like doctors. I left late today. I did hope to be here yesterday because my father-in-law is in his last, probably 48 hours before he dies of cancer, and I'm watching a guy who's lived his life. He's now in his mid-80s, and he's dying with peace. You know, the test of your worldview is not how you act in the good times. The test of your worldview is how you act at the funeral. And having been through literally hundreds, if not thousands of funerals, it makes a difference. It makes a difference what you believe. So we give it all back. And then we set up 3 foundations. Working on some of the major problems of the world, illiteracy, poverty, pandemic disease, particularly HIV/AIDS, and set up these 3 foundations and put the money into that. The last thing we did is we became what I call reverse tithers. And that is, when my wife and I got married 30 years ago, we started tithing. Now, that's a principle in the Bible that says give 10% of what you get back to the charity, give it away to help other people. So, we started doing that. And each year, we will raise our tithe 1%. So, our first year of marriage, we went to 11%. Second year, we went to 12%. And the third year, we went to 13%. And on and on and on. Why did I do that? Because every time I give, it breaks the grip of materialism in my life. Materialism is about all about getting, get all you can all you get. Sit on the can and spoil the rest. It's all about more, having more, and we think that the good life is actually looking good. That's most important of all. Looking good, feeling good, having the goods. But that's not the good life. I meet people all the time who have those. And they're not necessarily happy. If money actually made you happy, then the wealthiest people in the world would be the happiest. And that I know personally is not true. It's just not true. So the good life is all about looking good, feeling good, or having the goods. If it's about being good and doing good, give your life away. Significance and life doesn't come from status. Because you can always find somebody who's got more than you. It doesn't come from sex. It doesn't come from salary. It comes from serving. It's in giving our lives away that we find meaning, we find significance. That's the way we were wired. Because, I believe, by God. So we began to give away. And now, after 30 years, my wife and I are reverse tithers. We give away 90% and live on 10. And that actually was the easy part. The hard part is, what do I do with all this attention? Because I start getting all kinds of invitations. I just came off a nearly month-long speaking tour on 3 different continents. And I won't go into that, but it was an amazing thing. And I'm going, what I do with this notoriety that the book has brought. Notoriety that the book has brought. And being a pastor, I started reading the Bible. There is a chapter in the Bible called Psalm 72. It's a Solomon's prayer for more influence. When you read this prayer, it sounds incredibly selfish, self-centered. It sounds like he says, God, I want you to make me famous. That's what he prays. He says, I want you to make me famous. I want you to spread the fame of my name through every land. I want you to give me power. I want you to make me famous. I want you to give me influence. It just sounds like the most egotistical request you can make if you were going to pray. Until you read the whole psalm, the whole chapter, then he says so that the king, he was the king of Israel at the time, it's a pax in power, so that the king may care for the widow and the orphan, support the oppressed, defend the defenseless, care for the sick, assist the poor, speak up for the foreigner, those in prison. Basically, he's talking about all the marginalized in the society. So, and as I read that, I look at it, and I thought, you know, what this is saying is that the purpose of influence is to speak up for those who have no influence. The purpose of influence is not to build your ego or your net worth. And by the way, your net worth is not the same thing as your self-worth. Your value is not based on your valuables. It's based on a whole different set of things. And so the purpose of influence is to speak up for those who have no influence. And I have to admit, I can't think of the last time I thought of widows and orphans. They're not on my radar. I pastor a church in one of the most affluent areas of America, a bunch of gated communities. I have a church full of CEOs and scientists. I could go 5 years and never ever see a homeless person. They're just not in my pathway now. They are 13 miles up the road in Santa Ana. So, I had to say, okay, I will use whatever affluence and whatever influence I've got to help those who don't have either of those. You know, there's a story in the Bible about Moses. Whether you believe it's true or not, it really didn't matter to me, but Moses, if you saw the movie, The Ten Commandments, Moses goes out and there's this burning bush. The God talks to him and the God says, Moses, what's in your hand? I think that's one of the most important questions you ever asked, ever be asked. What's in your hand? Moses said, it's a staff. It's a shepherd staff. And God says, throw it down. And if you saw the movie, you know, he throws it down and becomes a snake. And then God says, pick it up. He picks it back up again, and it becomes a staff again. Now, I'm reading this thing, and I'm going, what is that all about? Okay. What is that all about? Well, I do know a couple of things. Number one, God never does a miracle to show off. It's not just, whoa, isn't that cool? And by the way, my God doesn't have to show up on cheese bread. You know, if God's going to show up, he's not going to show up on cheese bread. This is why I love that what Michael does. Because it's like, okay, if he is debunking it, then I don't have to. But God, my God, doesn't show up on sprinkler images. He got a few more powerful ways than that to do whatever he wants to do. But he doesn't do miracles just to show off. Second thing is, if God ever asks you a question, he already knows the answer. Obviously, if he's God, then that would mean that when he asks a question, it's not for your benefit, not his. So he's going, what's in your hand? Now, what was in Moses' hand? Well, it was a shepherd's staff. Now, follow me on this. This staff represents three things about Moses' life. First, it represented his identity. He was a shepherd. It's the symbol of his own occupation. I'm a shepherd. It's a symbol of his identity. His career, his job. Second, it's a symbol of not only his identity, it's a symbol of his income. Because all of this as assets are tied up in sheep. In those days, nobody had bank accounts or American Express cars or hedge funds. Your assets are tied up in your flock. So it's a symbol of his identity. It's a symbol of his income. And the third thing is a symbol of his influence. What do you do with a shepherd's staff? Well, you know, you move sheep from point A to point B with it, by hook or by crook. You pull them or you poke them, one or the other. So he's saying, you're going to lay down your identity. What's in your hand? You got an identity. You've got income. You've got influence. What's in your hand? And he's saying, if you lay it down, I'll make it come alive. I'll do some things you could ever imagine possible. And if you watch that movie, Ten Commandments, all of those big miracles that happened in Egypt are done through the staff. Last year, I was invited to speak at NBA All-Stars game. And so I'm talking to the players because most of the NBA games, NFL teams, and all the other teams have done this 40 days of purpose based on the books. And I asked them, I said, what's in your hand? So what's in your hand? I said, it's a basketball. And that basketball represents your identity, who you are. You're an NBA player. It represents your income. You're making a lot of money off that little ball, and it represents your influence. And even though you're only going to be in the NBA for a few years, you're going to be an NBA player for the rest of your life, and that gives with your enormous influence. So what are you going to do with what you've been given? And I guess that's the main reason I came up here today, to all of you very bright people at TED, is to say, what's in your hand? What do you have that you've been given? Talent, background, education, freedom, network, opportunity, wealth, ideas, creativity. What are you doing with what you've been given? That to me is a primary question about life. That to me, it's what being purpose-driven is all about. In the book, I talk about how you're wired to do certain things. You're shaped. This little cross takes spiritual gifts, heart ability, personality, and experience. These things shape you. And if you want to know what you ought to be doing with your life, you need to look at your shape. What am I wired to do? Why would God wire you to do something then not to have you do it? If you're wired to be an anthropologist, you'll be an anthropologist. If you're wired to be an undersea explorer, you'll be an undersea explorer. If you're wired to make ideas, you'll make ideas. You're wired to paint, and then you paint. Did you know that God smiles when you be you? When my little kids were little, they're all grown. Now I have grandkids. I used to go in and sit on the side of their bed. I used to watch my kids sleep. And I watch their little bodies rise and lower. I would look at them. This is not an accident rise and lower. I got to joy out of just watching them asleep. Some people have the misguided idea that God only gets excited when you're doing, quote, spiritual things like going to church or helping the poor or, you know, confessing or doing something like that. The bottom line is God gets pleasure watching you be you. Why? He made you. When you do what you were made to do, He does, that's my boy, that's my girl. You're using the talent and the ability that I gave you. So my advice to you is, look at what's in your hand, your identity, your influence, your income, and say, it's not about me, it's about making the world a better place. Thank you. 好了，我的这个演讲给大家说完了，其实是不很精彩的演讲哈。大概讲的就是成神的事情啊，就是你到底是怎么才能拥有一个非常非常愉快的人生，或者说有目的性的人生哈。那么这里我不给大家讲太多哈，其实这个很简单，我只给大家讲就是摩西的那一段。啊，那么摩西呢，天主教称为叫做这个梅瑟啊，是在旧约圣经的出埃及记等书中所记载，公元前13世纪是犹太人的民族领袖。史学家认为呢，他是犹太教的创始者，他在犹太教、基督教里都被认为是极为重要的先知。按照以色列人的传承呢，摩西五经便是由其所著。按照出埃及的记载，摩西受耶和华之命，率领被奴役的希伯来人逃离古埃及，及前往一块富饶的应许之地。在经历40多年的艰难跋涉，他在就要到达目的地的时候就去世了。在摩西的带领下呢，希伯来人摆脱了奴役的悲惨生活，学会了遵守犹太十诫，并成为历史上首支这个尊奉单一神宗教的民族。也就是说，摩西是创造了这个犹太人的啊。他就是率领犹太人，所以他就在这个圣经中是一个神圣的人物。那么他这里怎么说摩西的呢？如果上帝某一次问你一个问题 ，If God ever asks you a question, He already knows the answer. Obviously, if He's God, then that would mean that when He asks a question, it's not for your benefit. 什么意思呢？啊？就是说上帝某次问你一个问题，他其实知道答案的。显然如果他是上帝呢，就意味着当他问一个问题的时候是为了你的好处，不是为他自己好。他问你手里是什么，那么摩西手里拿的是是一根牧羊人的棍子。现在跟着我这样来想这个故事。Now follow me on this. 啊，就是跟我们这样来想这个故事。什么故事呢？这根棍子在摩西的生活中代表三个东西。首先它代表他的身份，他呢是一个牧羊人，他是他自己的职业象征。我是一个牧羊人，他是他的身份、职业、工作的象征符号。第二呢，他不仅仅是他的身份的象征，他是他收入的象征。因为所有他的财产都在羊的上面，那个时候没有人有银行账号、美国运通卡或者是对冲基金、支付宝什么的哈。那么你的财产都在羊上面，那个时候没有人有银行账号、美国运通卡啊，所以都是他身份的象征，也是他收入的象征。 第三呢，他是他影响力的象征。你拿着一根牧羊人的棍子能干什么？不用说你也知道，能用来把羊群从这个地方赶到那个地方。不管怎么赶，拖他们或者戳他们，不管用什么方法，所以他是在说，你这样放下你的身份，你手里是什么？你有身份，有收入，有影响力，你手里是什么？他在说，如果你把它放下，我就会让它火起来，我会做一些你根本想象不到的事情。如果你看过那部电影《十诫》，你就知道，所有那些埃及期发生的这些大奇迹呢，都是通过那个棍子啊完成的。啊，然后他就讲到这个 NBA basketball player。啊 ，NBA 球员。去年我应邀到 NBA 全明星啊演这个演讲，当时我就跟那些球员聊说 ，NBA 啊，橄榄球 NFL 和所有其他的球队，大多数球员都参与过基于那本书《有意义的40天》的课程。我问他们说：“你手里是什么？对吧？你手里有什么？”我说：“一个篮球。”那个篮球代表了你的身份，你是谁？你是一个 NBA 球员。你也代表了你的收入，你从这个小小的球上面赚了那么多钱，它也代表了你的影响力。即使你只在 NBA 里面待个几年，你今后都会被看成是一个 NBA 球员，而这个身份给了你巨大的影响力。那么你准备怎么对待这些上帝给你的东西？我觉得这也是我今天来到这里的主要原因，是对所有你们这些太子聪明人来说，你手里有什么，你拥有什么上帝给你的东西，才能背景、教育自由、人际网络、机会、财富、想法、创造力。你在怎么对待这些给你的东西的时候，这个对我来说是人生最基本问题，这个对我来说是目的驱动的所有内涵。在书里面，我讲到你是怎么被搭建去做某些事情，怎样被塑造的。这个小小的十字架里包含着精神上的礼物，心灵、能力、个性和经验，这些东西塑造了你的状态。如果你想知道你应该怎么对待你人生，你需要审视一下你的状态。我被搭建起来去做什么？难道上帝创造你出来去做一些事情，却又不让你去做？如果你被创造出来去做一个人类学家，你就会成为一个人类学家。如果你被创造出来去做一个海底探险员呢，你就会成为一个海底探险员。如果你被创造出来去做生意，你就去做生意。如果你被创造出来去画画呢，你就去画画。这里有个事儿，就叫做You're made to be something, 哈，你被创造出来去做某事。你知道你在做好你自己的时候，上帝会微笑吗？当我小孩还小的时候呢，他们现在都长大了，现在我都有子孙了。我经常走他的卧室里面，坐他们的床边，竟然看到孩子们睡觉，就只是看着他们的小小的身体一起一伏，一起一伏，看着他们我就会想，这绝不是偶然。那么一起一伏，就只从看着他们的睡觉我都能感受到愉悦。有些人错误的认为呢，只有你做经常的事情的时候上帝才高兴，比如去教堂帮助穷人或者忏悔诸如此类。其实最根本的是，上帝从看着你做自己该做的事情中得到快乐。为什么？因为他造就的你。而当你在做该做的事情的时候呢，他呢就想，这就是我男孩，这就是我的女孩，你们在运用我给你的才华和能力。因此我给你们的建议是，看你手里是什么，你的身份、你的影响力、你的收入，说这些与我自身无关，这就是为了让这个世界成为一个更好的地方。所以呢，他就结尾就说啊，你做什么事情啊，与什么钱呐、啊、什么都没有关系。Is to make the world a better place. It's about making the world a better place. 好了，那么我给大家讲完了，不知道大家有没有听明白呢？那么我们下期再会。
更多节目下载荔枝 FM 收听。